everybody. My name is Catherine, and I'm an alcoholic. This is not my favorite thing to do. This is not my forte, but when you're asked to do something in AA, they always tell you you need to do it. And that's what I'm doing. But anyway, my home group is the Saturday Morning Women's Group. A lot of girls over there are in that group. My sobriety date is December the 22nd, 98, and I don't know how I'm still living, truly. You know, when I first came in, thank God I got a sponsor right away, and she had a sponsor, and so it was, you know, a family affair. She got me that foundation that I needed from the very beginning, and that's the things that I was taught in the beginning was to read my literature, go to meetings, call my sponsor every day at 6 o'clock, not 6:01, and pray and meditate and try to do the next right thing. I started drinking when I was around 12. I think that's when I took my first drink. And I don't think I drank alcoholically at that point, you know, because it was just a, you know, weekend thing with my friends. And, you know, that of course there was some pot smoking too, of course, and back in the 70s. And, but, you know, and I was the youngest of five kids. And of course, my parents tended to spoil me a little bit because I was the youngest and I was the little girl. And, you know, so I demanded a lot of attention. That was the first thing I really kind of remembered. You know, when you come into AA and you look back on all the things that happened, you know, when you were a kid and through your drinking career or whatever, you see things that you didn't know, you know, was the beginning of just that mental, you know, thing that goes on in our heads that we don't think like other people. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that, you know, I was shy, but I did demand a lot of attention. So there was that extreme, you know, of wanting the attention, but not wanting the attention. I didn't do real well in school. I just didn't, I think there was a lot of ADD thing going on, you know, and they didn't know much about it back then. So I didn't really, I wasn't able to pay attention. I wasn't able to really do that well in school. So again, that kind of, you know, that low self-esteem of not doing well. And, you know, it's just like feeling like I never fit in. And so the drinking helped all that. It relieved all of that anxiety, all that angst that I was feeling. And so I didn't realize too that there was alcoholism in my family, you know, when I was growing up. So I look back and, you know, I had a great aunt that died of alcoholism, and I had one aunt that actually, you know, made it, and she, I think she got sober in like the 60s, and she started going to that Friday night discussion meeting, you know, back in the day. And, but I had no idea that there, that, you know, alcoholism ran in my family. I don't think that would have made a bit of difference. If somebody had told me, you know, I think you're, you know, if you're drinking, you better watch out because you're going to be an alcoholic. I don't think that would have made a difference. I think I would have done exactly the path that I was supposed to be here. You know, that's how it works. Let's see. So my drinking really took off in college. That's where, you know, we did a lot of binge drinking and day after day and started getting into some trouble. My roommate and I actually got kicked out of this Christian college that we were in because of drinking. We had, you know, all the boys in the dorm, and it was a Christian school. You weren't allowed to have the boys in the dorm and the drinking. And, you know, that we got caught. And so we said, okay, you know, we're banned to our rooms. We didn't stay in our rooms. We went right back the next night, did the same exact thing, brought the boys back in the room. Just, you know, that crazy thinking, like we weren't going to get caught and like we weren't going to be found out. And so anyway, needless to say, we did get removed from the college. I think we were the first women in the history of that college, which goes back to the 1800s, that got removed. And but my parents, we only were kicked out for that semester, and then we were able to go back. I don't know why my parents sent me back in that same situation that we were in. I think it was sort of like out of sight, out of mind, not wanting to deal with it, you know, my parents, and they just had enough. They didn't know what to do with me. I didn't know what to do with me. You know, just driving drunk, blackouts. You know, blackouts happened really, really early for me. And I didn't understand what it was. I thought it was a normal thing to black out and not remember. And then the next day, of course, I'm sure all of you have experienced this. You get up and you're asking people, you know, in the whoever you're around, you know, well, what happened, you know? What did y'all, what went on, you know, trying to be real discreet about the whole thing. And they would be shaking their head and looking at me and like, girl, it was just, it was not good, you know? So no telling what things happened, but now I know that was a, alcoholism is a progressive disease, and I did, you know, these are things that you learn when you come in here. You don't know that then. So there were periods of time that I would quit drinking. There was one period, it was about 9 months, because I was getting in trouble at work. And so I thought, well, maybe that is the problem, you know, maybe it is the alcohol. And so I quit, and things got better, but I didn't go to meetings. I didn't go, you know, I didn't go get any help of any kind. I just did it on my own. And then one day, you know, it just came to me. I thought, well, let's celebrate. It's been 9 months since I've had a drink. So my then boyfriend, who is now my husband, you know, we went out and got champagne and celebrated the fact that I'd been 9 months sober. And that's crazy. You know, those are the crazy things that you think, you know, that's the mental problem that goes on. And that was there long before I ever picked up a drink. But once I picked up the drink, the mental illness came very quickly. You know, I look back because when I got sober, I have not relapsed since I got sober. But I look back on the times that I tried to stop and I tried to, you know, refrain from drinking during the week, and it would be Wednesday and I would already be back drinking, you know, and didn't understand why. I could not for the life of me understand why that was happening. I just, you know, it didn't add up to me. And so I'm asking people in my family, you know, I have a brother that's a doctor, so I thought, well, I'll call him, he knows everything. And I'm like, do you think I'm an alcoholic? And he said, no, you know, you're not. You know, I have all these wonderful codependent people in my family that they're going to agree with me, you know. No, you're not alcoholic. You're just, you know, drinking a little too much. And I'm like, okay. So maybe I'll go see counselors, psychiatrists. Nobody could help me. I mean, I was drinking going into the sessions with them, you know, and it was pointless what I did. But those are the things that, the crazy things we do, thinking that, you know, somebody else is gonna fix me. You know, I did not want to have to do anything myself to stop. My husband and I got married. It happened in this order. I got pregnant, and then we got married. And things were okay for a good little bit, you know, when she was younger. It was like, you know, maybe through when she was 5, 6, 7, it was okay because I had that responsibility of taking care of a child. And don't get me wrong, I was still drinking, you know, and I couldn't wait to stop breastfeeding so I could drink, you know. That's another crazy thing. But it just started progressing from that point on, you know. I just could not stop for the life of me. I could not understand why I couldn't stop. And back up a little bit, you know, I was raised in a, you know, Episcopal church. You know, St. Paul's Episcopal is where I grew up. And, you know, my mom was in the choir and my dad was, you know, on the vestry and all this stuff. And we did everything we were supposed to do. I thought it was kind of like the Leave It to Beaver family. And what I didn't realize until I got older, you know, appearances can be very deceiving. You know, my dad liked to run around with women. And as I got older, I found out about it. So I, you know, there was that, these secrets that were going on. You know, I thought that, you know, that I had to, we weren't allowed to talk about these things, you know. So I learned early on, don't talk about your problems. You know, they don't exist if you don't talk about them. Sweep them under the rug, they don't exist. And so, but then I was trying to kind of cover up for my dad too, you know, when my mom go away and he would have the girlfriend over and I would kind of clean up behind him, you know. That's sick. I mean, that was just, you know, the pattern of my childhood. And so anyway, it finally, I think about the last couple of years of my drinking, it just steadily got worse and worse, and I just, you know, just couldn't understand why. I would pray and I would ask God to please relieve it from me. And, you know, I thought, well, if I exercise on the treadmill and do all this stuff, you know, that I would be, you know, the health thing, the food thing, you know, just be healthy and all would be well. And it just got progressively worse. And so the day came, my husband, I was drinking every day, every night, drinking myself into oblivion. I worked for my father at the time, and I couldn't even go into work. And before then, I was taking a Pepsi can and filling it up with wine and drinking at my desk, you know. But I had to. I had to, or else I was going to go into withdrawals and the shakes and all that stuff, It was miserable. Finally, my husband asked me, he said, now alcoholism runs on his side of the family too, so he had to care for his grandmother who was an alcoholic. And it was funny because Ann Knuckles, that used to come, you know, be around, she's been gone for a little bit, but she knew my husband's grandmother and said, boy, she was a hard nut to crack. She was one of those that just would not give up. But she finally did. But my husband knew a little bit about, you know, rehabs and detox and all that stuff. So he finally said, do you want some help? And I said, yes. And it was around Christmas time, and I did not think that I was going to make it. It really felt like I was going away from here. And I convinced him to buy me a beer on the way. And once I got there, that beer relieved a lot of the pressure that I was feeling. And I'm like, nope, not ready. Not ready. Take me home. So I'm sure it was frustrating, you know, very frustrating for him. So it was only a few days after that that he took me back. And when I got there, they said I was near death. I mean, my blood pressure was through the roof, and, you know, I was just oblivious. I didn't know what was going on. It was Christmas time, and I was in my room. I finally, you know, agreed and was admitted, and I'm in my room. And I said, isn't that nice? They're playing Christmas music for me. Mm-hmm. And they weren't playing Christmas music. I mean, I'm glad I heard Christmas music, mm-hmm. you know, but I was hallucinating, you know. I was hearing things. And still really kind of not understanding what had just happened. But, you know, of course they you know, round you up and send you to all the meetings, you know, there at Maryview. And, you know, and I was, what was ingrained in me was that I needed to find a sponsor as soon as I got out, which I did. Found a girl, and that didn't work out. I could never get in touch with her. But I came to the Saturday morning women's group, which used to be at the Boy Scout cabin. And I walked in and I looked across the way and I thought, that girl, I used to drink with her. And we were something else too. I'm like, God, if she can get sober, I can get sober. And she asked me, she said, do you want me to be your sponsor? And I said, yes. I didn't know what to do. I just didn't know what to do. So she, you know, she really did give me that foundation in the very beginning of working with me out of the big book every day. She read, you know, and we talked, and we met once a week. And, you know, it was a learning experience for me. You know, it wasn't one of these aha moments, you know, where I just, oh, this is just absolutely wonderful, you know, now I'm all better. It wasn't like that. I mean, I always believed in God, but I never had that personal relationship that, you know, some people, you know, normal people have. So I thought I had just been too bad. I thought I had done some just horrible things, and, you know, nobody could, you know, it was unforgivable. And so coming into AA, I realized that, you know, God is a forgiving God, and I, you know, took solace in that. It just was one of those things that I had to hang on to because it would have eaten me alive. And so, you know, the first few years were you know, I was sort of on that pink cloud at first. Oh, it's so wonderful being sober, you know. I felt good for the first time in 10 years, you know. I did kind of bounce back. I was younger, of course. I was in my 30s when I got sober. And, where am I going with this? But she was my sponsor, you know. I didn't like a lot of what she had to say, and I didn't agree with a lot of what she had to say, and I had to realize that I had to give up trying to play God, because I was still trying to run my life, and I was still making a mess of it. And so she would, you know, have all these suggestions for me, and I'm like, it's nice that y'all have to do all this stuff, but I'm not that person. And she kind of let me go a little bit like that, and then she said, look, if you don't do these suggestions like I asked, you're going to get drunk again, and you might not make it back. And that scared the living shit out of me. And so, you know, I buckled down and, you know, worked with her and got to the third step prayer. And it was just, I don't know if everybody does this, but she had done it with her sponsor, and we knelt down in front of each other and held each other's hands and read the third step prayer to each other. And that was kind of the first time I felt like a spiritual feeling, you know. And then as time went on, I was just feeling more connected, and like I understood what the program was trying to offer me if I would only let it. You know, I was not one of those that, you know, gave in real easy. But anyway, it was a slow process, but it's one that is so, so worth it. You know, I want to say so much, and I'm not doing a real good job of this, but anyway, it's you know, one of those things that if you would just come and just stay. You know, they say the miracle happens, you know, when you sit and listen. You know, that was, and I did do that. I was not a very vocal person. I was very quiet, and I would just listen. But when I would listen, I would think, you know, I could not relate to what y'all were saying for some reason. So I'm like, y'all are just so pitiful. I'm sorry y'all are, you know, y'all feel that way and y'all are having those struggles, and I'm fine. And when I finally opened up my mouth at the nudging of my sponsor, and all this stuff just came out, like, okay, I am one. I mean, I've earned this seat. It's you know, a wonderful program. It's not one of those things that you know, it's progress, not perfection. I don't do this thing perfectly every day. But like I said in the beginning, I do the things that are suggested of me, and I do them still today. And that's why I feel like that, you know, God is doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And that's why I'm still sober today, because I am not in charge. Anyway, it's just been a great road to recovery, and I am so glad to be here. I don't know what time it is, but I appreciate y'all letting me share my story. And thanks so much.